Welcome to the Round 4 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week we're joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus. Good to be back, mate.
Certainly exciting to have a different guest with us this week.
First-timer.
He's a member of the Supercoach Coach Veterans, a long-time member of the Supercoach Coach community. His name is Keffa on the forum, so welcome onto the show, mate.
Welcome, Kev. Hey.
G'day, Marcus. G'day, Donkey. It's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to chatting Supercoach with you guys this week.
For all our listeners out there, let's give a little bit of a background to the man, Keffa. Why don't you give us a bit of a spiel about your Supercoach background, mate?
I think I got into Supercoach probably 1 or 2 years after it initially launched. I fell in love with it straight away, although I think I had probably a season or two there in the beginning where I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't understand the Guns and Rookies approach. And I just thought that the way to go was to try and spend every cent that I could in the beginning. But it didn't take me very long to get my head around it. And certainly I've encouraged a lot of other friends along the way to get into it. And they've improved as well. I think the longer you play, the better you get. And I think belonging to a community like Supercoach Coach has probably been the biggest thing by itself that's made the biggest difference to my improved performance.
And how do you average year to year? Your last few years, how have you gone?
Fairly typical to finish around about the 2,000 mark. So I've been inside the top 1,000 before, but I've never been lucky enough or good enough, I should say, to finish inside the top 1,000. I don't think I've ever finished worse than 10,000th, or maybe in the very beginning I did. So I think a typical performance, I think it was about 2,200 last year or 2,090 or something like that. And I hate to say it, I'm probably tracking for something similar at the moment. Hopefully I've got a little bit of luck and I can do a little bit better than that.
Now, you do have a bit of a reputation for being an aggressive super coach.
The aim is to win the $50,000. And I think until I've ruled myself out of that, I'll try and win it. And I'll do everything I can to try and win the $50,000. Once I realize, and I'm honest, once that's out of reach mathematically or just realistically, then I kind of put that cue in the rack, I suppose. And I just think about protecting the league and trying to get the league as best it can, because there's nothing wrong with finishing, you know, 3,000th or 4,000th, you know, from a league perspective. It's better to finish higher, of course, but doing everything I can to protect the league and its integrity and its reputation and my own performance as well, so that I be proud of my own performance, but also be invited back into the higher leagues the next year. There's no doubt that it's fun to do well and fun to get a reputation as someone who does well, but I still feel like I haven't had that really high finish in the top 1,000 or top 500 that I'd really like.
Very consistent though, Keffa. Like you said, a very sensible approach when you're out of it, so we love having you on the team. How did you actually go on the weekend, mate?
Well, I didn't have Patrick Cripps, so that was a real downer. No.
Can you actually explain that a little bit more, Keffa?
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't ask. Look, I've completely lost my head when Patrick Cripps was a late out prior to round two, and he hadn't done much in round one. And I hadn't used any trades at that point.
You didn't trade him out, did you?
Oh, no.
Well, yeah. I did. I had a mate, a Melbourne barracking mate, who was very, very, very bullish on Ben Newton. Now, I already had, it must be said, I already had, you know, Ellis Yolman, and I already had Miller and Heaney and Vandenberg, and I had all these guys. And I thought, well, how can I make a good team great? And I thought, my mate was really bullish on Newton, excited about Carlton. I wasn't very excited about Cripps. I certainly pulled the wrong rein and I traded in Newton. And while Newton wasn't horrible, he certainly didn't have 175 in him like our friend Patrick Cripps did. So I think every year I have one trade or two trades that I look back on at the end of the year and it just makes me want to cry. It really does. And I think that was my trade this year. I think I've made that trade. So you'd think you'd learn after having played the game for 7 or 8 years, but there I am making the same mistake. So I've finished with a score of only just over 2,000. I had 2,028 points for the round, which was pretty poor, and it brought my ranking up to 19,395.
Mark, how did you score, mate?
Yeah, happy for the weekend, mate. 21.43 for me, which looks like the top score again for the show after destroying you and Dunny last week. Takes me inside the top 10,000 to 9,393. Main problem for me was just the back line. I had McIntosh and Oxley both on their ground. Heath Shaw Saad, and on Sunday afternoon, Cali just destroyed me with 35 points, and GC looked terrible on the weekend, which was pretty disappointing. But on the plus side, I had Heaney on the bench. I had Cripp score 172. I had Fifey as captain. I loopholed Hogan onto the ground and Vandenberg with their good tons from Friday night. And I also did Bartel to Goldstein this week, mate. So 154 on debut was very tasty.
Yeah, like I said last week, mate, big reason for me keeping my score respectable compared to yours it has been Goldstein. So I think it would have been, you know, 90 points difference if you had Bell Chambers instead of him this week that I didn't get on you this week. So unfortunately, sitting on 20.75 for the week. But, you know, not all downs because I did end up keeping Bartel. I had Hogan and Vandenberg both with the emergencies with the first game and so decided to take their scores with Gray and Bartel still on my team. So playing with one less premium and I've got a Guns and Rookies team, so that left me with only 12 premiums on field, which is always going to lead to a pretty sketchy round. So all things considered, not too bad. Brody Smith was a bit annoying with 60 and Hodge at 81 was frustrating on debut, especially because I traded Goods to Hodge and I did have time to actually have a wait and see on Pierce, but I didn't. And Pierce scored 87, which is the high score for the season. Didn't have to tag Mark, which I said might happen. Scored 87, so hopefully he gets a few more rounds of that and I'll be happy. So he'll sit at D4 now, which is a bit of a relief.
Upgraded him 3 spots.
Yep. Well, after Saad, McIntosh, and Oxley all scored under 62 points, I guess he gets bumped up a little bit. Yeah, I ended up trading in Luke Hodge this week. So that was my main trade for the week and decided to spend all my money because, like I said, I've been very gung-ho about Tarrant. So I've always been keen on the double down this week. So I thought I torched all my cash last week, picked up Luke Hodge. So like I said, even though my team isn't performing well, you know, I'm pretty confident I got Hodge, I got Smith, got some big hitters back there. So hopefully when the Guns and Rookies pays off, my team starts firing. So more of a long-term approach this year.
Sounds like an interesting strategy there, mate, just torching all your cash.
Well, I'll get to double upgrade next week, mate, and then I'll be laughing.
Long-term gain for short-term pain. I think it'll work out well for you, Marcus.
Well, I'm already at 10K, so there's no point trying to speed up there, I reckon, mate. I'll take the slow and steady approach this year, maybe. Anyway, that's the score update for this round. Just want to give you guys a little bit of an update on the forum. So on supercoachcoach.com.au, do have a forum. So I hope you guys, you know, start engaging with us a little bit more starting from next week. When we release the podcast next week, it'll be on a brand new platform. So it'll be on a new blog, and we'll be releasing our new forum at the same time. So mobile responsive, actually works better on your iPads and your phones. So people like Kefir and Mark, who spend a lot of time on there, will be pretty happy. But hoping that it's just a more engaging forum in general. There's a slew of improvements that we'll announce next week or in the post somewhere. So just look out for that. Hope you guys get involved when we're all upgraded.
Looking forward to it.
So for this week, we're going to get into the questions again. We take them from at SupercoachCoach on Twitter and on Facebook.com/SupercoachCoach. So remember, on a Tuesday, you can ask us your questions and hopefully they'll make it onto the show. We'll start this week with a question from Paul Cassatt on Facebook, and he's asking, when does Supercoach 2016 open? So, Paul, unfortunately, we're starting off with another highly ranked sad post, which is fair enough. We had some hideous results. If you had Heaney instead of Cripps on the weekend, you forfeited 165 points, and anyone who did traded Cripps out was particularly hurting. Kefa, unfortunately, you're one of them. But yeah. Hang in there, guys. You've got, hopefully, 27, 26 more trades, something like that. So plenty of time to bounce back. To Dom Dunn's question, he's asking about Tarrant. So we're getting into the real guts now. Obviously, Tarrant and Cracker, the big two topics this week. So Mark, we know last week that you really like Cracker and we're basically waiting to see him not get injured basically this week and happy to bring him in. He scored 82, of course. So he looks fairly solid. But Dom Dunn wants to know whether Tarrant is comparable to Nathan Cracker because he's got a terrible injury history. Now, obviously, yeah. I've been on record as being very gung-ho, so you should probably outline all the negatives before I just blow my roof off at the fact that he scored 121!
I think the thing that stands out about both Cracker and Talon is their elite ball use. They're both very good kicks of the footy. Tarrant will get injured. Almost guaranteed, isn't it? He has never survived to a season before, so there's nothing to indicate that he will this time. What, maximum games in the past, I think, have been about 15 and 13, and only one game in 2014. So, yeah, really hasn't been able to get his body on the park. He's had the red vest a lot in his career already. So, there are some pretty big risks associated with Tarrant. With that said, he's averaging, what is it, like over about 115 from his first two games. So, even if he walks out and in the first minute trips over and smashes his face on the ground and can't play for the rest of the year, you're already probably going to make about 60 or 70 grand. So a little bit of insurance on Tarrant from that one. And I was probably a bit more skeptical than you were, Marcus, coming into the season. I don't know, like an injury key defender didn't really sound that enticing, but watching him against the Cats, I did notice there was one play where he was under a fair bit of pressure and just picked up the ball, kicked it around his body about 55 meters onto the wing, and just put it right in the chest of one of his teammates. And I just thought, wow, that kid can really kick a footy.
I've always been very keen on Robbie Tarrant, watched him play in a couple of hot games. That's probably did it for me. I happened to watch him in a patch where he had a good run, so I knew his potential.
I think it's really important not to overthink this pick too much. He's played two cracking games. It looks as though his spot in the side's really safe. He's nice and cheap at 144,000. I think if he was 210, 220,000, I could understand why people would be skeptical about picking him. But I think at 144,000, I think you've just got to pick him. He's going to make a stack of cash. He's at the point at the moment you could even play him on the ground. And I think to get a rookie like him come along, I think you've got to take him no matter the timing.
We'll go to @nearly_23's question, Cracker v. Tarrant. So first up, if you're only bringing one in this week and you had to rank the two, who would you pick first? Or would you just say, no matter what the situation is, you'd definitely trade both these guys in this week?
Probably depends on your team and the makeup and the structure of your team. I think they're both great. I think you should go balls out this week to try and pick up Cracker and Tarrant, because I think they both present so much potential and so much value, and they just tick every box that you want for a rookie coming in. Cracker's the one with DPP, dual position status. He might be the one to come in, but honestly, I'd make a real concerted effort. I'd make it a priority to get both these players into your team, because I think they look like must-haves at the moment.
I just want to remind everyone that Tarrant, although he's a forward, kind of makes him ridiculously easy to trade to, because pretty much everyone has mid-forward premium. So at worst, just swap out a position one week, downgrade this week. Next week, you'll get an upgrade anyway and pivot back. Swap Salem out after he's gone up another 30K, for example. So you can always trade Tarrant in this week by trading a midfield rookie like Heaney into the forward line and getting Martin into your midfield just for the 1 week.
Can I just add something on both Tarrant and Cracker? They've both got a round 13 bye, which just is another box ticked. I mean, if you were in any doubt about picking these two, I think that probably get you over the line. There's another 9 weeks or something for these guys to mature. Who knows what they'll be priced at by that time.
Mark, yeah. If you had to pick between the two, which would you pick?
It's a really tricky situation. I think that there are certain teams where you probably only can go one, or it's harder to take both of them. I know I've seen teams out there that have been holding on to the Ablett cash for a week or two because they've had other things that they needed to do, and it's sort of pretty painful to hold on to that for another week. So I can see situations where you might pass up on one of them. If I had to pick one, I think I'd probably take Cracker because of his dual position status and the fact that he's cheaper. So I think those two factors make his flexibility a bit more enticing. I guess you've got Cracker's DPP versus Tarrant's huge scoring so far and probably better job security. So that's a really tricky one. Still just leaning towards Cracker, but I think that Kev's probably right and you should make every effort to take both.
I think in general, the only situation where you wouldn't be bringing one of these guys in is if you had something like 500,000. If you had 500,000 and you had to downgrade to pick up Cracker and Tarrant, you'd be really just loading up on way too much cash in 1 week. That'd give you 900 grand. You couldn't even spend it all next week. So if you had that amount of money, you probably wouldn't. And in that situation, I would probably just pick Cracker ahead of Tarrant. I've been so crazy excited about Tarrant, but I just love the DPP flexibility. We've been waiting for a rookie this entire time who can give us that flexibility. Lambert was the only other one. We might not get another for a long time. Yeah, I reckon just jump on that flexibility, and he'd be my pick if you could only pick one. Next is James DeCellis's question from Facebook. Made the silly choice to trade Cripps to Van Berlo after round two. Is it stupid to look at getting Cripps back in my side? So
maybe we should ask Kev for this question.
Yeah, Kev, what are you going
to
do?
It's important not to be stubborn. Just because you traded him out, it doesn't mean that he can't be a good pick for your team. However, I've traded him out. I've already spent one trade on this bloke. And because he comes along again as a good opportunity at the same time as Cracker and Tarrant, who are so much cheaper than him, he's a no for me.
He'd almost have to be a keeper if you're bringing him back in, and I don't really see him achieving that status. Yeah. I'm glad to have him, but I don't think I'd be trading him in at 300.
No, I never say never, but I don't think so.
Yeah, you kind of just got to forget the fact that you made the trade and look at it. Look at him as a proposition just for the week. Absolutely. He's 294,000, so he's a mid-pricer. Like Mark said, he's exactly right. If you pick him at that price, especially in round four, you kind of want them to be a keeper. So if Cripps is not going to be that, which we're almost certainly confident he's not, then you probably don't jump on him. I mean, we didn't recommend people picking Rich. We probably wouldn't recommend picking Cripps at 295. No. Yeah, we'll move on to the next question from Scott McNaughton on Facebook. He's asking whether he should focus on bringing in rookies like Tarrant and Cracker, so bring in both of them, or pick one and fix problems in the back line like Nunes. So Scott's got Nunes, and Tom Cat also asked a similar question about Goods. They got a ton of likes and favorites, so there's a lot of people out there with underperforming backlines. They want to bring in both these guys, not able to MPP any sort of thing to trade out a backline player for one of these guys. What do you think you'd do?
I'm actually in that situation where I do have Goods still in my backline that I'd really like to upgrade, and have Saad, McIntosh, and Oxley on the field. Now, I guess I'm going to be put into a really tricky situation if Saad, McIntosh, or Oxley are either dropped or named sub. That's going to make decision making really tricky. Ultimately, my plan A would be that I would survive one more guys on my field. I'd get the cash from bringing in Tarrant and Cracker, and I'd be up looking to upgrade Goods straight up next week.
What that does is it buys you another week of data. So it gives you another look at Nunes, and it gives Goods another chance. I wouldn't trade away a Nunes yet, because I think he's only 190 or 100 away from looking like a good pick again. He's finding the football, isn't he? He's just butchering it a little bit. So I'd take the two rookies and just take another week looking at Nunes and Goods.
100% agree with that, guys. Very big on double downgrading. Definitely recommend everybody do that. I was already planning on it last week. Unless you have an injury trade or lots of cash, that's definitely what I'd do. So now we're finally down to who to actually trade out. Big dilemma this week. So if you got injuries, like we said, it's an easy out. So I still got Bartel. I'm going to trade him out. I only got to pick one guy. But the three biggest names that have been put up on the chopping block have been Heaney, Anderson, and Van Berlo. So let's start off by ranking those three. Sure. Who would you trade out first? They're probably the weakest three targets, unless you guys can name anybody else.
Van Berlo is probably the one for me who's going to go, because he's at about 300,000. He hasn't quite made as much money as I would have liked, but someone's got to go for Cracker, and unfortunately he's going to be it. There's still $187,000 made from that downgrade, which I think is pretty reasonable, plus the DPP that gets opened up with Cracker. Heaney's the one that I'd hang on to. I don't think Heaney's done his job for us yet. He's only 232,000, and I know that seven's going to stall his price for a long time, but he's a really good player, and he belongs to a team that's probably going to end up in the top four, Sydney Swans, and I don't think he's done his job for us yet. So personally, I'd hang on to Heaney.
Couldn't agree more, mate. Pretty much exactly what I was going to say. I think that Anderson played pretty well in the reserves on the weekend. Hawks picked up an injury or two. You'd think that he'd get more game time, but the fact that he isn't playing, I'd probably have him pretty close to the top of the list for Cracker. I know you don't really get any money out of it, but it brings some cash generation into your team, and you can keep Van Berlo onto the ground. Van Berlo, I know the Crows were very disappointing on the weekend, but Van Berlo was really, really disappointing, and was lucky to get 45 in the end, just nowhere near the ball. Doesn't seem to be getting the midfield time that he was in those first couple of weeks. So very disappointed to have brought Van Berlo in, and I think that 200,000 is pretty exciting to use elsewhere in my team, I think. And yeah, I think you're right about Heaney.
Yep, I agree with you guys. So one Anderson out to Van Berlo with his high price tag, and then last Heaney. Probably look to maybe even hold him until the buys and side swap and dodge a donut there, hopefully. So if you only had one of Heaney, Anderson, Van Berlo, and you wanted to double downgrade, you had to get rid of somebody else, who would you guys actually look to toss out of the more expensive guys?
That's a really tricky situation for me. I'm looking at Bell Chambers, Salem, Clark. I mean, I'm not going to get rid of Jesse Hogan at the moment, and Loney's just scored an 84 and still under 200,000. So I think it's a really tricky situation. I really want to keep Bell Chambers. Yeah, I think that I'm probably leaning towards Salem.
I'm looking at trading out a player next week because I'll have heaps of cash to upgrade, and Salem would be my target to upgrade next week. So I'll agree with you guys and say if I'll force this week, I'd probably downgrade Salem. We'll move on to the next question now. Finally off the Cracker Tarrant topics, that took a while, but that is probably the major trades for this week. I think you're either trading one of those two players in or you're dealing with an injury this week. Nonetheless, we'll take some other extra questions here. The first is from Speculator or @Teddy_McKay from Twitter. And he's asked, what's wrong with James Kelly? This more midfield time claim appears to have been a hoax.
What have you done to us, Marcus? You'd lied to us.
Scored 35. And yeah, there was some talk about him having to play defensive roles and all that, but I was watching the game pretty closely as we were losing. And unfortunately, Geelong played 7 defenders that day, and so did North Melbourne. And they were both happy to play a loose man, and all of the Geelong talls basically got the points. Kelly was played in the back line this week. We lost Lonergan last week. Kelly was probably played more as a rebounder. I don't think he was played in a very defensive position. I didn't see him in very many defensive spots. Jed Bewes had the work on Lindsay Thomas. So, yeah, he just had an absolute stinker, which sucks. I think he's just a bit old, and there's some teams that move the ball through the midfield ridiculously quickly. North Melbourne are one of those teams, and when they move the ball really quickly, unfortunately, it appears the pace of the game has slightly evaded him, I think.
I would have thought with Bartel injured, Stevie J starting as a sub, that this was screaming out for Kelly to get some big midfield minutes.
Well, I'd say that it's only a week-to-week thing. I really don't think that that's Geelong's game style. It's just on game day, Chris Scott thought that it was best to play loose man that day.
It was wrong.
Yeah, well, it was wrong for our Supercoach scoring as well.
Yeah, I'm just mad.
But the thing is, Harry Taylor, I think Blitzarves, Rivers, I think we had 4 defenders, Enright, they all scored above 90 in the 100s. So there was points in the back line, he just didn't get any of them. So hopefully it's just a nightmare game from him and he turns it around. I don't think you should be worried about him missing out on midfield minutes for the exact reasons that Mark lined out before. So we'll move on to the next question from the Kraken or @Fabregasco. What's up with the so-called midfield premiums? Barlow, Beams, Parker, Pritis, and Stevie J are the ones he's named. Any of those guys still legit upgrade options? I think probably more pertinently, as experienced super coaches, are any of those guys dropping out of super coach midfield premium status?
Yeah, I think a couple are. I think Barlow has clearly been playing a different role this year where he's not just racking up those possessions in the midfield. They've just got him playing more on the flanks and Lachie Neale's getting a bit more of that midfield time. So maybe that might change as the season goes on, but he definitely seems to have come out of premium status at the moment. Stevie J as well, that was a preseason thing, I'm guessing, that just not fully fit. But I do expect Beams, Parker and Pritis to all average pretty well over a stretch of games this season.
Yep, agree with you, Mark. On to the next question now, and it's from James Hawkins or @JMHawkins on Twitter. And he's asking whether Goldstein is a must-have player. Mark, he scored 150 for you in the first week. Is he a must-have player?
Great question, mate. I think I brought him in last week because I probably answered that question with a yes. I think I gave my assessment last show that I think maybe he is a cut above the rest of the ruckman, and the stats certainly indicate that. I'm pretty happy with 150 on debut. It'll be interesting to see whether he can keep that up. I know you brought him in as well this week, Keffer, so I'm guessing you have pretty similar thoughts to that.
Yeah, look, I think he looks a Monty if he stays on the park to finish in the top 2 or 3 ruckmans. Yeah, another one that you probably don't need to overthink. I think he's got a monster team sometimes. His ceiling's high, his floor's high. Get him in. Get him in.
Yeah, I've been red hot on him this entire time, so it goes without saying that he's an absolute must-have for me. I said last week that I would already trade Ruckman straight to Goldstein, and he scored 150, so if you missed out on that, I wouldn't be missing out on any more. He's such a dominant Ruckman and in really good form. Talked about at the start of the season, wanting to actually start the season off well, because that's not something he's ever been able to do as a player. And I'm pretty sure he's ticked that off. So you want to get on him, he's red hot. We'll move on to the next question from Dion Abel. What to do with Tommy Bellchambers? So, Mark, you mentioned before you want to hold on to him. Kefa, what do you reckon?
I can't see Tom Bellchambers ever going big, ever giving you a 120 or a 130. And I think he needs to be able to do that to counteract his 60s. You know, he's over 300,000. For me, I just didn't want his score on the field. He presents that ruck forward eligibility, but I just thought, I'm going to go with Nick Natanui and Goldstein in my rucks. I'm going to get rid of Bellchambers. And when I run into some trouble with a one-week injury to a Nick Nat or a Goldstein, well, I'll just bring in someone like Paddy Ryder in my forward line so that I can make that switch. I just didn't want Bellchambers score on the field. So
the common line actually between Mark and Kefa is they both actually took moves to get Bellchambers off the ground. So Mark's
mine was only a 1 week on, mate.
Yeah, but you have the option now of playing Hogan week to week ahead of him, which, you know, is an option that you do want to have. He hasn't really been setting the world on fire. Our forward rookies have actually been beating him in terms of average.
I'm going to be backing Ding Dong against the Saints on Sunday.
Anyway, my plan is to be able to at least keep him off field as an option. I definitely don't want to lose him as cover. So, but I'm definitely red hot on him. And I think we were talking earlier in the season about there not potentially being great ruck forward options, but Ryder's actually been smashing it to start the season. 77, 82, 93, and then 109 on the weekend. If he can average 90, 95 playing that forward ruck role as swing cover, my plan is to hopefully eventually bring him in.
Don't pick the trader. Come on, man.
So, to be honest, the plan is, with my upgrade cash, to hit up Ryder. He's a round 13 buy player. We've got Bellchambers at the round 12 buy. So I'll trade Bellchambers to one of Martin or Jacobs after their buy at round 11. So that's the plan. And then the final setup will be Goldstein, Jacobs, and Ryder in the forward line. So that's my plan. But Bellchambers is staying in my team until the mid-year mark at the very least. If he turns it around, Mark, like you said, then I'll gladly keep him. So keeping my fingers crossed with you, I suppose.
It's a very solid plan, Marcus, and it's great forward planning, so I hope it works out for you, and it may well.
Yeah, hopefully Ryder keeps it up. We'll see. We'll move on to Gary Reel's question now, and the last one for the week. I think a key factor this year has been use of the bench loopholes. Not having Cripps on field last week and having Heaney would have cost you a huge amount of points. So he was advised in the preseason against picking a non-playing player as a rotating donut for the captain's loophole and everything. But now that he's missed out on those opportunities, he's not sure cash generation always beats points on field. What do you guys reckon about that?
On the weekend, and you did as well, Marcus, I think I had Vandenberg and Hogan with the emergencies on them, and I got them both onto the field because I was able to bring O'Brien from my rucks forward and put Bellchambers on the bench to take Hogan, and I had Robbie Gray out. And I think that Robbie Gray really signifies why that strategy doesn't really work, and that's because you're always probably going to have a non-playing player anyway, or most weeks you're going to be carrying one of your premiums that's not playing, so you just don't need a dead rookie in your team. I'm not sure how you feel about this sort of thinking, Kappa.
No, I don't think you need to take a dead rookie in your team either, because as you say, most weeks you will have one anyway, just natural attrition the way it goes.
Yeah, I just really wouldn't worry too much about it. I haven't had a single issue with, like, not being able to have a loophole option or whatever. And that's with Mason Cox. Like, I took the absolute worst ruck forward option in terms of loopholing just because I needed the money. And I haven't had a single issue. Bartel, like, I've just had issues, so
it's going to happen a few times this year where you take the loophole, but then you have a laid out for a Sunday game and you can't replace that player. And so you end up getting a donut.
We've seen that happen to other teams.
Yeah, that's just going
to
wipe out like 3 weeks worth of loopholing, like that one donut. So I mean, it's a pretty risky proposition.
No, you are playing the fire. So that wraps up this week's show and a great guest feature from Kefa. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for having me, Marcus, and thanks for having me, Donkey. And good luck, everybody, and good luck to you guys for the rest of the season. And I hope we pull the right rein in the next couple of weeks. I think Tarrant and Cracker are pretty much no-brainers this week. But whether you go that way or not, everybody, good luck to you all.
And if you ever want to contact the Sage Kefa, he's always knocking about the forum. So head over to supercoachcoach.com.au, log on to our forum, and you can have a chat to any of the veterans. Got plenty of knowledge and wisdom there. There's heaps of great Supercoach brains residing on the forum.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a big week this week, mate. Hopefully there's a bit less carnage this week. It's sort of Every week so far has felt like such a massive struggle to get through the weekend with a bunch of low scores here and there. So, yeah, hopefully the Bombers can get back on the winning board as well with the win against St Kilda at the Dome.
Yeah, first game back at Docklands.
It's exciting. I like footy indoors in winter. It's nice and warm.
Yeah, Mark, you've got yet another week of an extra premium on field against me, so I'm almost resigned to a certain loss this week, unfortunately. So I'm not quite looking
it's
forward
gonna
to that.
It's going to be hard to make up,
man. Yeah, a grand 200 points. We'll see, mate. We'll see. Anyway, it's been a great show, so thanks, guys, and all the best to the community. Hopefully you bring in players with huge negative break-evens in Cracker and Tarrant. And remember, you can access those break-evens on supercoachcoach.com.au. We release those every Monday and post links on our social media pages, and we'll be on a new platform next week, so it'll look even spankier. So thanks very much, guys, and all the best for the upcoming round. See ya.
Yeah.
See ya, guys. Yeah.